Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Forever Dog.
Hi, Anna.
Hi, Andrew.
And hey, everybody else.
And welcome to our podcast.
Scary stories to tell on the pod. It is a comedy podcast about scary stories, urban legends, and spooky things you tell us about. And everybody, it is October season. We are headed towards the holiday of Halloween.
It's
pumpkin, everybody.
Happy pumpkin.
Happy pumpkin.
I said it's an orange kind of day.
Anna, we were remembering that that the Thai Beanie Baby pumpkin's name was Pumpkin the Pumpkin, which I think is true unhinged.
It is unhinged. The word is, it's chaos.
I know.
Pumpkin the Pumpkin? You're going to start a war with that kind of talk. You got to be careful when you say Pumpkin the Pumpkin.
And if we have any Thai heads out there and we're remembering this incorrectly, please don't let us know. We can't bear criticism.
We can't. And if we got any Tanya heads out there, you shouldn't have faked being at 9/11.
Wow.
The woman who wasn't there, look it up. I could watch it every day of the week. Okay.
Anna, we're back with our wonderful guest, Spencer Novick.
Spencer Novick. Thanks for having me again.
As we discussed last week, Spencer is an incredibly talented comedian and physical performer. You can see him as the Pale Man in the most recent season of American Horror Story. And he's here to talk about spooky stuff with us today.
Yes.
Spencer, what's the scariest thing in the room with you right now?
The Google. I have a mini Google Home.
Oh, that is scary.
Yeah.
Terrifying.
It's listening.
Yeah.
Terrifying.
Spencer, we have asked you today to read a scary story from the Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark series by Alvin Schwartz with drawings by Stephen Gammell. Were you familiar with these books as a kid?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Very much so. They're terrifying. The illustrations are terrifying.
Yes. I feel like your oeuvre as a performer can sometimes fit within a lot of these illustrations. And I mean that as a
very angular. Very angular.
Yes.
Misty. Thin lines.
A lot of thin lines.
Something very kind of kinetic about the illustrations, even though they're like still, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it feels like there's like cotton glued to the page. Like it's very hazy.
Mm-hmm.
And the word is spindly or spindly?
Mm, yes.
Spindly. A lot of things that are spindly.
That does make me think, because I also can see how one would think would be spindly. And that does make me realize, Anna, that for a long time, I thought the word misled was pronounced misled on the page.
Yeah, of course.
Devastating.
Because it should be.
So Spencer, like, were these books that you read as a kid or were they ones that you stayed away from?
I think, as with anything scary, I was magnetized by them, but also wanted to nothing to do with them.
Yeah.
Wow, yeah. Relate to that. There should be a Yiddish word for I love scary things, I'm scared of scary things.
That's true. If we have any Yiddish scholars out there and there's a word that's close to that, please do let us know.
I think there's a 100% chance that all of our listeners are to some degree Yiddish scholars.
Now, Spencer, you discussed in the last episode this fear of like kind of windows, especially like big panes of glass into entryways and seeing someone who doesn't belong there. Did you have any other childhood fears?
Small spaces. I'm really terrified of small spaces.
Interesting.
I was going to a show with some friends in Australia one time, and the show was inside of a shipping container. And I believe the show was called Seance. And you would go into the shipping container and it was It was a long table with a bench on either side, and you sort of barely could squeeze in past the table to get to to get inside. And so like two rows of people would enter into the shipping container, and then you'd sit down, and there was headphones on the table, and you'd put on these headphones. You'd be completely sense deprived. And a person, essentially an usher, came in once we had all sat in. I was pushed in all the way to the end, to the back of the shipping container, because I got there early. And a usher came in and said, "Hey, you know, like, we're going to deprive you of all your senses." And hey, you pointed directly at me.
Hey, wasted. They threw up.
Yeah. And then they said, "So if you're claustrophobic, like, you should leave now." And I started to just sweat. I looked at the people that I came with, and I sort of whispered, I said, "Hey, I don't think I can do this." And they said, "You can do this." And I said, "I can't do this." And then I, you know, rose my hand in front of, you know, the 24 other people in this tiny shipping container. And the usher looked at me and said, "Yes." And I said, "Hey, I think I need to leave." And I think he thought I was kidding. And I was like, "No, I need to leave because I am claustrophobic." And then he said, "Okay, yeah, you should leave." And then I had to inch out over people, over a row of strangers. And it was the, like, no one left. So I just had to like squeeze myself past seated strangers. Which was the most embarrassing experience.
That's the worst. To make your butt smaller while inconveniencing someone?
Exactly. It was terrible.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
What a scary place to put a show.
Yeah.
In a shipping container. Well, those fears are completely justifiable, you know? Mm. Like, I get claustrophobia entirely.
You want to be comfy.
You want to be comfy. And it then makes a lot of sense, Spencer, that you lived in Las Vegas for so long, because it's all wide, expansive deserts.
Expansive, exactly.
Yeah. So, Spencer, you have a story before you.
Yes.
I have one story in my – I have two beautiful ghouls in front of me, but only one photo in my hands.
Imagine sending, like, the red spot home. Like, "I'm so sorry." And that girl with just spiders pouring out of her face cries.
Oof.
That was part of her makeover. She didn't even want spiders out of her face, but they were like, "If you want to be a model, you have to be okay with this."
Or if she did have spiders, Tyra was like, "I'm adding more spiders."
And she's like, "I'm going to look the same."
Okay. Oh, gosh. Spencer, what is the story?
The story is the black dog. Should I do it?
Yeah. Go right ahead.
Okay. All right. I'll do it. Okay. I'm scared. Here we go.
I'm scared.
It was 11 o'clock at night. Peter Rothberg was in bed on the second floor of the old house where he lived alone. It had gotten so chilly, he went downstairs to turn up the heat. On his way back to bed, a black dog ran down the stairs. It passed him and disappeared into the darkness. "Where did you come from?" Peter said. He had never seen the dog before. He turned on all the lights and looked in every room. He couldn't find the dog anywhere. He went outside and brought in the two watchdogs he kept in the backyard, but they acted as if they were the only dogs in the house. The next night, again at 11 o'clock, Peter was in his bedroom. He heard what sounded like a dog walking around in the room above him. He dashed upstairs and threw open the door. The room was empty. He looked under the bed. He looked in the closet. Nothing.
Hi, everybody. Tim Heidecker here to let you know about our latest episode of Office Hours Live.
Office Hours is great fun.
With the great John Early and Theda Hamill.
Very handsome.
Thank you. They're here to talk about their new movie, Stress Positions. And we just had a wonderful time. There was a lot of laughter and joy. Don't believe me? Well, listen for yourself on the podcast app of your choice. You're not going to want to miss a second. That's at Office Hours Live. At the podcast app of your choice.
Bum, 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 bum.
I love Vic and Doug, and I love drinking my wine.
But when he got back to his bedroom, he heard a dog running down the stairs. It was the black dog. He tried to follow it, but again, he couldn't find where it had gone. From then on, every night at 11, Peter heard the dog walking in the room above him. The room was always empty. But after he left, the dog would come out of hiding, run down the stairs, and disappear. One night, Peter's neighbor waited with him for the dog. At the usual time, they heard it above them. Then they heard it on the stairs. When they went out into the hall, it was standing at the foot of the stairs, looking up at them. The neighbor whistled, and the dog wagged its tail. Then it was gone. Things went on this way until the night Peter decided to bring his watchdogs into the house again. Maybe this time they would find the black dog and drive it away. Just before 11, he took them up to his bedroom and left the door open.
Okay, and Spencer, for this next part,
yes.
Anytime he's talking about his watchdogs,
yeah.
Could you do us a favor and replace the word dogs with landlords?
Yes, and okay, landlords I'll do that.
For any time, okay.
Okay, yeah, great.
But then the black dog can still be the black dog.
Okay, great. And he can still be Peter?
Yes, he's still Peter.
Okay, he's still Peter, okay. Then he heard the black dog moving around above him. The landlords pricked up their ears and ran to the door. Suddenly, they bared their teeth and snarled and backed away. Peter could not see the black dog or hear it, but he was sure that it had entered his room. His landlords barked and snapped. They darted forward nervously and then backed away again. Suddenly, one of the landlords yelped. The landlord began bleeding, then dropped to the floor, its neck torn open. A minute later, the landlord was dead. Peter's other landlord backed into a corner, whimpering. Then everything was still. The next night, Peter's neighbor came back with a pistol. Again, they waited in his bedroom. At 11 o'clock, the black dog came down the stairs. As before, it looked up at them and wagged its tail. As they started toward it with a pistol, it growled and disappeared. That was the last Peter saw of the black dog, but it didn't mean that the dog was gone. Now and then, always at 11, he heard it moving around above him. Once he heard it running down the stairs, he'd never managed to see it again, but he knew it was there.
That could happen.
That could happen.
This is a wild ass story.
It's sort of... You go ahead.
No, you go.
I say it's sort of the story of like a bad dog owner.
Yes, that's exactly it.
Like, and like a dog that just needs a home.
Right.
I know. Like, for the first few paragraphs of the story, this is just describing something I would pray for, which is just like a dog shows up when I'm not expecting it.
Yes.
And you don't even have to feed it. You know, it's just there.
And he's wagging his tail. Like, for so much of the story, there's no problem. The problem comes when he's like, hey, get.
It also, like, part of me was like, oh, maybe this takes place way long ago. But no, it's like, no, he has a heating system and his name is Peter Rothberg, which just feels like a very contemporary name.
Which is, this is a sort of a trope of the Scary Stories books, first name, last name. Sometimes yep. Characters have first name, last name. Sometimes they don't.
Yeah, it kind of lends a little more credence to the story. Real people have first and last names, you know?
Yeah, but sometimes it's just the man.
But also, this guy is also very, like, I mean, this is not the way that you introduce dogs to each other.
No.
Yeah. That's right? A problem. Like,
and this dog hasn't actually done anything bad. The black dog hasn't done anything bad. The black dog probably just has a history of, you know, not really enjoying the presence of dogs larger than him.
Right.
Listen, Spencer, you're a fellow owner of a small dog.
Exactly.
You know how it is. They don't like bigger dogs.
It's a bad dog owner here.
Yeah. Also, naming them guard dogs to me implies some, like, these are outdoor dogs that are guarding. I also have questions about, you know, what kind of dog owner this is.
They're guard landlords.
Right. The landlords. He's bringing the landlords in. He's looking to start something with the landlords.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. So in terms of like what's going on with this story, to read in the back in the notes section, it says the black dog. The story is based on an experience reported in the French village of Bourg-en-Forêt in the 1920s. A spectral black dog like the one in the story is said to be the ghost of a wicked human or a foreteller of death, which I think we did a special urban legisode about scary dogs.
Yeah, right? Devil's dogs and devil dogs.
Devil's dogs. Yeah, Andrew did that. You can go dig through the archives for that. So like, but it is interesting because I guess the foreteller of death, the only death that happened is when he tried to attack it with his landlords.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Like, this would have been fine.
Right. I mean, I guess so. Spencer, as a dog owner, and as a dog owner of a dog that you have put so much time into making the dog comfortable and feeling safe, what would you do in a situation where there's a spectral black dog in your home?
I think I would, like, first I would put out some food.
Yeah.
Like, put out some, like, food or water. Give and just be turkey. Like, is this, how is this, how is this dog? Like, it takes time to, you know, get a dog that feels comfortable with you. This dog is clearly running away from you all the time. Right. So try to build up a rapport. Eventually let the black dog try to smell your hand. Like, don't try to pet the black dog. Just, like, extend your hand out and see what happens. And the dog might bite, but honestly, like, you're going to have to build up to that.
You still pet a dog, though.
You still that's pet a good a dog. Day.
Yeah, that's a good day exactly. in anyone's book. Yeah, there's, like, I follow all these dog training Instagrams now because I'm lonely and tired. And they describe things that I was doing naturally anyway when I made an unfamiliar dog, which made me feel so proud that I couldn't get up. You're supposed to crouch down low and face your body a little bit away from them.
Yes, because you're much safer. Make eye contact.
Don't make no touch, no talk, no eye contact. And you can extend your hand out a little bit, but you're just going to make yourself that much more approachable to a dog, or to a potential romantic partner. I think if you did this to a person, they would like it also.
Make yourself small.
Make yourself small, crouch away from them, and maybe stick your hand out. No touch, no talk, no eye contact.
That's like they always say if you should never, like, hug a dog that you don't know, especially because a dog, like, that doesn't make sense to a dog evolutionarily. They're like, I'm being dominated. Like,
yes.
Yeah. I read somewhere that all dogs hate being hugged. I was like, that can't be possible.
Yeah. I know.
Not my dog.
I think maybe it's different when you and your dog have a longstanding relationship, you know, like, I think that's a very different experience, but
it's very sweet of you to say that, Andrew. I appreciate that.
But I also feel like, I don't know, Lady Bird seems to enjoy being hugged and having body contact with you.
She doesn't. I think she puts up with it because I feed her and I am safe mother home. But, like, I think that she genuinely hates it.
That's so funny.
Because, like, when she's relaxing and doing what she feels like doing, she'll go down by my feet on the bed and curl up there. Like, she likes to curl up either on me or near me, but never, like, I don't know. She's not like a pet me dog. She's like I like to lay near you.
Yeah.
As I say that, she's, like, fully inside with Jason. hates me.
I think, like, I'm always, whenever I see, like, a little kid give a dog a big hug, I'm always like, oh no. But most of the time it's like the dog gets a sense of, like, I don't think I can hurt this thing to defend myself. But yeah, don't let your kids hug dogs, everybody.
Don't.
They don't want it.
Well, so sometimes dogs are ghosts. Mm-hmm. Like, we've all heard the story of somebody feeling a dog who has passed away kind of settle in on their bed at night.
Oh, yeah.
This is one of my favorite. You also find that with cats. Mm-hmm. Scientifically speaking, this occurs with cats. And then another thing is that dogs can see ghosts.
Yes.
Right.
And Spencer, would you rather have dogs be ghosts or have dogs see ghosts?
Be ghost.
Your team be ghost?
I'm team be ghost. I'd rather
defend your position.
See ghost is scary. Mm-hmm. Be ghost is sweet. Be ghost That's is because if I saw a ghost dog in my house, I would not be scared. I don't think. I think I would go, oh, look, I have a ghost dog. But if I saw, but if my dog started barking at a ghost,
oh yeah,
that is horrifying. That is very scary because that's a home intruder, and I think that home intrusion is very scary.
That is true.
It's also like, do you want a human dog or a ghost dog? Is the first tertiary question. The second tertiary question is, do you want someone close to you to have an unknowable skill, or do you yourself want to have an unknowable skill? And I think it's a lot harder to have someone you love experience something that you could never understand.
Yeah.
Like, it's much easier to have your own inexplicable experience.
See ghost or be ghost is the new Myers-Briggs, Anna. You just invented it.
There's 400 different options.
I'm an intuitive see ghost, be ghost. I think I would rather have a ghost dog too. I guess to me, it is situation specific. You know, I think maybe there are certain times when I would like to know where the ghosts are, and having a dog who can see ghosts is helpful. But I think there's something calming and revitalizing about being aware that there is some form of afterlife, and beings that we care about can still show affection and receive affection. I think that's nice. Mm.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Their heart does go on. yeah. I kind of want to be contrarian and say I'd rather see ghosts, because you guys both said be ghost. Mm. But yeah, no, I'd be lying. I like a ghost dog. It's nice also to think about as the owner of a currently alive dog that maybe she'll be trotting around sometime in the future.
Yeah, I think that's a very helpful thought. I think when it comes to animal ghosts, it then brings up the question, like, do animal ghosts have unfinished business, you know? Or are we talking about just like another plane of existence?
It's got to be another plane of existence. I don't think unless the dog's coming back to like eat one last bone.
Right. Dogs tend not to have
one last leg.
They should go to the cemetery. That's where all the bones are.
Yes. Right. Yes.
Knowing a dog with a long-term goal is very funny to me. The idea of that.
Yeah. I just need to eat my shit one last time. Please, dig up my shit. Bring it to the shit yard. Let me eat it. Then I can be free.
I have one small tangent that has been like crossing into my mind for a bit while I've been reading this.
Do it.
Do you know that like cats sometimes kill babies? Is that true?
I think that's like an old wives' tale.
I think there's the thought of a cat stealing a baby's breath.
Breath, exactly. Yeah, don't let like it, sitting don't on let... its chest and then breathing in its breath.
Yeah.
That's straight up dumb to me. I think it's dumb. I think the cat likes warm stuff and the baby is warm.
Right.
Yes.
Grow up.
I think it's like, I'm sure in history a cat has killed a baby. Let's just say it. You know?
Oh, sure. Of course.
And you could kill
someone with an ice cream cone if you hit the pressure point.
That's true.
Grow up.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So have moon boots, but you still see kids bouncing around in moon boots.
I'm Googling, can cat kill baby? Andrew, you say your thing.
But I think also it's like when you're talking about allergies, there might be a baby who has a cat allergy. You're not aware. The lungs get inflamed. Baby stops breathing at night. Yeah. You as a parent in the Middle Ages, you come out, you see the cat next to the baby. The baby's choked to death. You're like, okay, the cat stole my baby's breath. I know math, you know?
Mm-hmm. I guess because it also comes down to this thing of like, for a while I was hearing there's something called SIDS, right? Is that real?
Yeah, sudden infant death syndrome.
SIDS is real.
And they were saying that SIDS is because of cats, is what I heard.
Oh, no.
That SIDS is literally the unexplained, that cats are the unexplained cause of SIDS.
I do not think it is true.
It's the same cat. So this is on Snopes.com.
Okay.
The Snopes thing is, cats suck baby's breath. Will a cat suck the breath from a baby? Claim. Cats suck the breath from babies, sometimes killing them. Status, false. Mm. Origins. The idea that a cat could suck the breath of an infant is simply a misguided notion. Cats just don't do that. It is said, oh, this is interesting. The smell of milk on the child's breath draws the feline in for the kill. But anyone who has been around house cats know the average moggy doesn't much care for the liquid. Moggy.
A British term for cat. I do
don't
know
be this. British on Snopes. Is Snopes British?
It does get sound it, British when you say it.
It
does
it to get,
yeah, Snopes. I'm curious about this now.
I don't like that. Is that true? Cats don't like milk?
I heard that. Yes, I heard that actually cats are lactose intolerant.
Yeah.
Oh, this says, given free choice between plain water and a bowl of milk, cats generally head for the water unless milk has been the only liquid offered to them from weaning onwards. Put more simply, unless the cat has been taught to like milk, it generally won't seek out that substance on its own.
Wow.
Calling milk a substance is kind of gross.
I know.
Oh my God. This article is amazing. Okay. I'm just going to keep reading. I'm having a good time. Are you guys having a good time? This
Love
is about black dog. This is about household animals and death. Okay. Another theory advanced as to why a cat would want to harm a baby relates to the jealousy the pet will supposedly experience when the little bundle from heaven is brought into the household. Oh. No longer the center of attention, the neglected pet is allegedly capable of setting about to get rid of what it sees as the usurper. This theory is of far more recent coinage than the bit of lore it purports to explain, though, coming into fashion no earlier than the 20th century, while the smother belief dates to at least the 1700s. In 1791, a jury at a coroner's inquest in England rendered a verdict to the effect that a Plymouth child had met his death by a cat sucking out its breath. The superstition is older, with print sightings of it recorded from 1607 and 1708, so that the 1791 verdict should be viewed with the realization that the jury was probably influenced by a snippet of everybody knows lore when it came time to explain a death for which there was no apparent cause. It is possible, here we go. It is possible that a cat might lie across the face of a sleeping child and thus, upon extremely rare instances, accidentally cause a death. But that is not the old wives' tale at hand, wherein the cat does so with malice aforethought. A news story emerging in December 2000 appeared to be an instance of this sort of accident when a woman said she found her six-week-old son dead in his crib with a family cat laying on the baby's face. Further examinations by pathologists laid this theory to rest. They attributed the death to sudden infant death syndrome. But wow. I don't know. The cat did it.
The cat was like, the glove doesn't fit. And it's like, you're not even trying to put the glove on, cat.
You're not trying. Yeah, this is Snopes. Listen, cats don't do this, but that cat did that. Sorry, this is interesting. Tragedy is hard enough to bear without it also being inexplicable. Better to blame the cat than to admit the cause of a child's death is unknown and thus could strike down another youngster at some future date. Folk beliefs work to give folks a sense of control over their destinies and thus some small measure of security in a capricious world. If a parent can believe that preventing crib death is but a matter of keeping the cat out of the baby's room, that parent will sleep a lot easier than one who realizes that such a tragedy could occur any night, cat or no cat.
Oh, God.
And then all this information about how cats have been viewed as evil for a long time.
Our need to explain, huh? Like, that's sort of what a lot of this stuff comes from.
It's interesting.
Yeah. Being able to put it on something so that you don't live in fear about the randomness of life.
Yes.
Wow.
Oh my God. Okay. Sorry. Two more paragraphs. Let me look. Cats, sorry. What if I just kept doing this for 8 hours and you guys were like, should we send an ambulance? What's going on? I'm sorry. I keep getting to a paragraph and being like, I love this paragraph. I don't know what to tell you. Okay. So cats are bad luck. Similar to the sucking life from a child by swallowing its last breath superstition was one about not raising a kitten and a baby together, lest the cat thrive and the child waste away. In that superstition, the cat was supposed to be stealing the child's vitality by magic. It's the last paragraph. As to how widely believed the breath-sucking tale is, a 1929 article in the Nebraska State Journal quoted a doctor as having said he had seen, quote, the family pet in the very act of sucking a child's breath, lying on the baby's breast, a paw on either side of the babe's mouth, the cat's lips pressing those of the child, and the infant's pale face as that of a corpse, its lips with the blueness of death. The doctor's emphatic statements to the contrary, the legend is still a fatuous piece of lore. It turns up so often, however, that it's no wonder the legend is so widely believed. And that's Barbara Michelson.
Anna, I have to say, I think I've had that doctor, and it's the same doctor who told me that in order to treat me, I needed to take my shoes off and walk around his office so he could watch my gait.
No.
Yes.
Gait,
this feels right.
Dr. Gait.
I feel like right after that, he might have said like, and also make sure that your cat doesn't suck your baby's breath. Like, it just feels very right in his world.
Spencer, would you ever steal a baby's breath, do you think?
No, I wouldn't. I would, unless that baby did something really bad to me.
Right. Andrew, what about you? Would you steal a baby's breath?
I wouldn't steal a baby's breath. I'd wait. I think I'd wait until at least like 23 years old until I would. Yeah.
Even if that baby did something really bad to you?
I think, because it's like a baby doesn't understand that it's done something bad, but I can hold a grudge until they're 23 and see if they do anything else that makes me mad.
Okay.
You know?
I guess that's fair. I want to rescind.
Andrew, what's scary about this story to you?
Okay. I will say that the scary thing to me, I agree with Spencer. I think Peter is the scary person in this story to me because Whoa. There is no one, the ghost dog is not bothering him at all. He's looking to start something. He's a shit stirrer in this ghost story. And it frightens me that he has a friend with a pistol and they're going to try to shoot the ghost dog. Like, the judgment here feels off. I think that the paranormal elements of this story are consistent and predictable. The people are unpredictable, and unpredictable people are scary.
Right. Yeah. I also, what's scary to me, like when you said that Peter's a scary one, that makes sense to me because I feel like this is the others with dogs. Like, I don't think the ghost dog is the ghost. I think he's the ghost.
Oh my God.
Oh.
Wouldn't that make more sense?
Yes.
That makes so much sense because also, why is this dog in the house? Does that make any sense?
Not at all.
It feels like that dog should be in that. Like, this dog's in the house. This is this dog's house.
Anna, you're
a genius.
And
then Peter's coming in. Wow, that's amazing, Anna.
You know?
And then it's like, then when the landlord dies, then that's a ghost dog too. Or no.
That's a ghost dog becoming a ghost dog.
Yeah. Wow. Oh, that's interesting. Mm. The fact that Peter and his friend are ghosts is such a good twist for this story.
Right. Or that his friend is alive but isn't related to him sort of in a sixth sense way, where he's just kind of he's doing him.
Because the neighbor whistles and the dog enjoys it.
Oh.
That's the only positive response is when the dog sees a So the dog is a ghost fighter.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
The dog fights ghosts.
You ever have a ghost fighting dog?
And then the reason the dog is only there sometimes is because the people who own the dog together broke up. And now they share custody, but like not that often. That's why it's every now and then.
Anna, this is a great series.
Thank you. I just sold it for a lot of money.
Spencer, we sometimes try to cast these stories with celebrities. Sometimes they don't even have to be famous actors. They can be politicians, athletes. Who would you cast as the black dog?
As the black dog. You know, I really do think a strong performance would come from Andy Serkis.
Yeah.
Wow. You think he'd be a good little.
I think he'd be a good little.
The image is sort of like a ghostly Scotty dog on the wall. It's like scary, spindly staircase.
That's right.
With a shadowy cloud that has like a Scotty dog face.
And big eyes. Yeah.
Big eyes.
And Andy Serkis. Yeah. Andy Serkis really, he could nail anything.
You think he could get down there? He could get down low?
I think he could crouch down low. I think.
Oh, yeah.
I think I'm also like I'm interested in like Kevin Bacon voicing the dog. Mm. Like a kind of
interesting.
Something a little kind of smoky and like not abjectly villainous, but like a little like he's seen some bad stuff and maybe he's made some mistakes in his past, but now he's on the straight and narrow.
Mm. Wow, yeah, that's nice. I could certainly see a Tatiana Maslany.
Oh, sure.
Doing a performance.
She can do anything.
She can do anything.
Yeah, I love that. Oh, that's really good. And I'm going to say for casting Peter, I don't know. I mean, LeBron?
Interesting.
Kind of a very charming, like a very charming person who then, if like going with Anna's twist, like in the end, the revelation that he's a ghost, I would kind of like to see LeBron realize he's a ghost. I feel like he might nail that moment.
Mm.
Totally. Ooh, that's great. LeBron a ghost. Tell everybody.
LeBron a ghost.
Spencer, who would you cast?
Yeah.
I need a second. I need another second. I really want to find the right person. I really want to find the right person.
Well, I feel like Chris O'Dowd would be good. And honestly, my number one casting for this, Spencer Novick.
Wow.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
I believe you sort of in a weird, and this is like a classic scary story set on the dark time period where it's like the 1920s, 1600s, 1970s, the city, the country. I just believe you in that.
Okay. You know what? I'm going to pick me then too. Cause like, honestly, I don't want anybody else to have it. Why?
Yeah.
You gotta hustle for yourself sometimes.
Yeah.
Spencer, it has been so much fun having you on the podcast. You told the story beautifully, I have to say.
Oh, thank you. This was great. This was so much fun to be on this podcast. I love this. And aww, I love you guys. And it's really lovely to
we love you,
be
friend,
able to hear you. Yes.
We love you, ass.
Where can people find your work, Spencer?
Maybe on my Instagram? Is that like, I don't know.
Yeah, do
know
it.
Yeah, right, on my Instagram. You know, Spencer Novick. Spencer at the tag handle is Spencer Novick.
And that's where Novick you can, with a C-H, everybody.
With a C-H. N-O-V-I-C-H.
And also, Spencer, you are incredibly good at TikTok. I think your username is still a random series of numbers and letters, but you are what I call a TikTok DJ, where like you just find the funniest stuff.
Yes, a TikTok sommelier.
Truly.
Sending us. Mm. So Anna and I are the beneficiaries of frequent TikToks that Spencer sends us, and everyone is a hit after hit.
That's true. I deeply appreciate that. I care very much about the art form.
It's sort of the opposite of what you do.
Yeah. I think that's why I appreciate it so much.
Oh, yeah.
Because I don't understand the, because I can't really understand the inner workings of it, but it, on such a visceral level, like they do such, they do something to me. Like when you find the right TikTok, it can really do something to you.
Is there a good TikTok people should watch? Like, if you have to recommend.
Oh man! I mean, we're really on the berries and cream kick right now. There's one sound that I love right now that I feel like the right tick. What are they even called? TikToks? I feel like the right TikTok hasn't been made with this sound, but I feel like one day there's going to be a brilliant. There's this sound going around of this guy going, "Are you shitting my dick?" And I think that there's a one day a brilliant TikTok will happen with that.
Oh my God. Maybe it's you. Yeah.
Maybe it's me.
You know those videos of like the mashed up chicken mush that they use to make chicken nuggets, and it's like pink goo that's coming out of a
pink
big
slime.
Pipe?
Yeah.
That feels like a great option for the undercurrent for that voice cue.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
Well, Spencer, we hope you have a very happy Halloween.
Thank you. You too. A very spooky one.
And Anna, something that you and I hope that everyone else has is a very
get out
forever dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Scary Stories to Tell on the Pod is executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. Produced by Tracy Soren. Original theme music by Chris Ryan. Cover art by Bats Langley. To listen to this podcast ad-free, sign up for Forever Dog Plus at foreverdogpodcasts.com/plus. Check out video clips of our podcasts on YouTube at youtube.com/foreverdogteam. And make sure to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook @foreverdogteam to keep up with all the latest Forever Dog news.